It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
During around 30 years reporting on Cardiff City for the South Wales Echo, I had close dealings with many Bluebirds managers. Alan Cork was a good guy and easy to work with, while Kenny Hibbett, Russell Osborne, Lenny Lawrence, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, Scott Young, Danny Gabbidon and more were good company. Of those, Lenny was the most successful and led City into the Championship via that 2003 playoff final win against Queen's Park Rangers, courtesy, of course, of Andy Campbell's magnificent extra-time winner. My favourite Cardiff City manager, without doubt, was Frank Burrows. The Big Scot could be gruff, he could be flipping awkward at times, and occasionally lost his cool after reading whatever article I'd penned in the Echo. But he could also be charming and helpful when I was the local Bluebirds journalist. Frank's second in command and good friend Billy Eyre was another gem of a man. I'll never forget a match at Bristol Rovers when I was chatting to Billy sometime after the final whistle. City players were boarding the team coach while I chatted to the Cardiff City assistant manager. I asked Billy about a defensive mix-up which led to a goal for Rovers, and he responded by calling the players off the bus. They were waiting for the journey home, and we were in the car park, but Billy insisted they get off again, and he put them into the positions they were in before that goal was scored. He then used them to explain where the mistakes had been made at the back and how City's coaching staff would work to erase those errors. It's a sad fact that both Frank and Billy have passed away. Rest in peace, guys. I didn't work alongside the likes of Eddie May and Jimmy Andrews, but having got to know them pretty well after their professional managerial careers were over, they came across as top football men. Jimmy's schooler too had a big pedigree in management. I would have loved to meet him. Frank, though, is my personal favourite. I'm not suggesting he was the best Bluebirds manager of all time. After all, Cardiff City have been promoted to the Premier League twice, while they were First Division runners-up almost a century ago and won the FA Cup in 1927. Frank was a serious football man. He led Cardiff City to promotion twice, the only man to achieve that, and those successes underlined his qualities. The first time I took note of him was during the 1969 season, when at the age of 16 I watched on television as he helped Swindon Town beat the highly fancied Arsenal in the League Cup final at Wembley Stadium. Swindon's Don Rogers took the main plaudits, scoring two superb goals in a 3-1 win for the Wiltshire club, while Burrows shone in defence. He was faced by another future Cardiff City manager in Bobby Gould, who led the Arsenal attack and was, in the main, shut down by Burrows. a memorable match, which I think I watched in black and white in the days before colour, if I remember rightly. And I thought of that game when I got to know Burrows far better during Cardiff City's pre-season trip to Keele University in the English Midlands years later. He had just started a second spell in the manager's hot seat, and during a week's trip, including matches against Stoke City, Port Vale and more, Frank and I would sit and enjoy a glass of wine after training and matches. The manager brought himself a bottle of Chardonnay white wine at the start of the week and drank one glass each evening, finishing off his bottle on the final night. I recall Wales international Peter Nicholas was also at Keele University that week on Premier League youth team coaching duty and occasionally joined our chats. This was a season of a pre-season training camp when Burrows brought in defender Graham Mitchell, who turned up to join the squad a couple of days into the trip. Lanark-born Frank started his playing days at nearby Sockey Juniors in Scotland. Then he became a Raith Rovers part-timer before heading south to sign for Scunthorpe United. He was a tough defender who tackled hard, a fact that Cardiff City striker Brian Clark confirmed years later. He recalled his clashes with Burrows from the late 60s and early 70s, saying, "Frank will tell you, I never had a kick when I played against him. I did, though, plenty of them. I had the bruises to prove it." Frank was a tough opponent. Burrows was a man of few words on occasions, but the master of witty one-liners when he felt in the mood. Burrows led Cardiff City to promotion from Division 4 in 1987-88, having replaced Alan Durbin as manager, and they also won the Welsh Cup, qualifying for Europe. He had been appointed by chairman Tony Clemo, a Cardiff City travel agent. Before he returned for a second spell at Ninian Park in 1998, when he used the same office from his first time at the club, I remember spotting him watching a Bluebirds performance at Barnet from the terraces. Frank was among the home fans, his flat cap pulled down as low as possible as he pondered whether to return. Thankfully, he decided yes. He left a coaching job at West Ham, where he worked under Harry Redknapp, for his return to South Wales and said, "When I took over at Cardiff City the last time, it was really a struggling club. I was hungry for the challenge and left my coaching job at West Ham to take it." Straight-talking Frank was a man who earned respect and loyalty. There were times when he would throw teacups around the dressing room with deadly accuracy, but he would never criticise his players publicly. "My players know what I think," he would say. I have to admit, Frank made me look a little silly after a match at Northampton Town's Sixfield Stadium. He and I had a difference of opinion at the time, and he had refused to speak after matches for a couple of months. That was typical Frank if he felt he was in the right. I was stood outside the away dressing room chatting to a local Northampton reporter and telling him that Frank would come out but would refuse to talk to me. City had lost 1-0 against Northampton that evening in a league trophy tie, if I remember rightly, and surely Frank would be in a foul mood. The big Scot emerged from Cardiff's changing room, smiling though, and said, "Hello, young Terry, what do you want to know?" I don't think Frank had heard me talking to the local journo, but his timing was immaculate. My fellow media man must have thought I was making it all up. Frank would read the South Wales Echo and react as he saw fit. He was strong-willed while I tried to stand my ground when it was right. I went to Ninian Park to interview Frank at 9 a.m. one morning. His secretary passed on the message that I was there, but he didn't appear. He wasn't due to be training because the players had a day off and it became a Mexican standoff. Frank stayed in his office. I refused to budge. There were two exits from the manager's office. At the end of a long corridor at Ninian Park and out into the car park, past the boot room and the other out to reception. I kept an eye on both. At around 4 p.m, Frank emerged from the door opposite the referee's changing room and into reception. I kept things polite and said, "Hi, Frank, you ready to chat?" He was shocked I had stayed, but he stopped and we chatted for 20 minutes or so. I continued to talk to Frank occasionally after he left Cardiff City, when he spent his time between the UK and America, going abroad to catch the sunshine. Even now, my thoughts go back to the days the hard, uncompromising Frank was in charge. He did a good job for Cardiff City on both occasions he was in charge at the club. Two promotions, that cannot be taken away from the man, and a Welsh Cup triumph, of course. He brought in players at the right time, players who improved the squad, and he brought success to the Bluebirds. The shock departure of Mark Delaney to Aston Villa and a £500,000 transfer was a blow in 1999. I think it was around March time. I was driving along the M4 to London with my best pal Lee Beams and another friend heading towards Brighton v Cardiff City, a match being played at Gillingham's Priestfield Stadium. Two of us had heard that Delaney had gone, but Beamsy didn't know. We decided each of us would name what we thought would be the starting lineup, and of course, two of us left Delaney out. "Don't be stupid," said Beams. "Delaney has to play. Is he injured?" And then he thought, "Well, has he been sold?" We revealed Delaney was going to Villa, and my mate said, "Stop the car, I'm getting out on the M4 and walking back." Thankfully, we persuaded him to stay in the car. "I'd only been at Cardiff for 8 months," Delaney said later. "I was finding my feet at that level, and then Villa came in for me. Cardiff were doing really well. We were flying high, and I was ready to stay at Cardiff for many more years. It's one thing to go from Carmarthen to Cardiff City, as I did, but then to go from Cardiff City to Aston Villa in the Premier League was huge." Cardiff was still promoted, along with Brentford and Cambridge United, clinching third place thanks to a goalless draw against Scunthorpe United at Ninian Park. The loss of Delaney hit Frank hard. He had signed Delaney from Carmarthen Town after paying to watch him in a Welsh Premier League match. Burrows had previously left Cardiff and Swansea because he believed they lacked ambition at the time. I have carried Cardiff City in the past by selling players," said Burrows. "I've carried Swansea in the past by selling players. I'm not going to do it for a third time." There is no doubt Frank and I had a love-hate relationship. There were times when we would meet at the Hilton Hotel in Newport and chat about Cardiff City over the usual glass of wine. Burrows, who died at the age of 77, is the only manager to have led the Bluebirds to promotion twice, in 1988 and 1999. Frank had some financial backing and added new recruits, including Willie Boland from Coventry City, but Cardiff struggled at home and were unable to climb clear of relegation problems. Lenny Lawrence, who would lead the Bluebirds to promotion 3 years later, played a part in Frank's departure from Cardiff City. Lenny's Luton Town team won 3-1 at Ninian Park, and City were truly awful that day. My player ratings against Luton included five 2 out of 10s, and Frank resigned on the Monday despite attempts by Chairman Steve Bawley to persuade him to stay. Boland was one of the players awarded 2 out of 10, and while he would occasionally pass a time of day informally, he refused to do interviews with me over the next 6 years before he moved on to Hartlepool United. Frank moved on before a new era under owner Sam Amam started at the club, and he recalled, "I was 54 years old when I was asked to return, and you don't get too many offers at that time of life. I had a house in South Wales. Cardiff were in a poor position, and I thought I would give myself 2 years with a limited budget to turn it around. Billy Eyre was the best signing I made. He knew the lower divisions. At West Ham, I was looking at the Premier League, and I had lost touch with the third division." Former Blackpool manager Eyre, who passed away at the age of 49, had also been assistant to Jan Molby at Swansea, and his view of Frank was, "The good thing about working with Frank is that you know where you stand. As a coach, he puts you on the spot, expects high standards, and you must respond or he won't tolerate you. He got the best out of everybody employed. One of the Frank Burrows stories which still make me smile surrounds midfield player Richard Carpenter. I was sitting in reception at Ninian Park, having requested an audience with the manager when the telephone rang. The receptionist answered. She took the message, leaned out the door which led down a corridor to the manager's office and yelled, "Frank, Richard Carpenter from Fulham on the phone. He wants to talk to you." A useful tip-off from the receptionist. Thank you. Last word to Frank's younger sister, Christine, who said, "My family moved from Larkhall to Fishcross because our dad had a job in the pits. Frank went to school and played for Socky Juniors before joining Raith and then Scunthorpe. Burrows was head boy at his school in Scotland and then completed an engineering apprenticeship at Melvin's in Alloa before embarking on his football career. Frank would cycle home during his break at work to have lunch with sisters Christine and Jenny, plus parents Jock and Teen. He was 6'4", big and tall, but quiet," said Christine. "He played centre-half and was a quiet person, apart from on the pitch. He was tough on the park, but his manner overall was mild. His life was football. He was an ordinary man with a good heart. I met his wife Wendy and she was a lovely lady. They spent a lot of time in America during the summer months. They had three children, Derek, Lorna and Christopher. I will never forget Big Frank. Thanks, mate."
Podcast Network.